Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And this is Doug Rocky, and welcome to Warrior Connection. We're on the Progressive Radio Network, and this is a brand new show. This is the second week of the show, and our intent is to inform veterans all over our nation and across the world about the health and environmental effects of war, what we need to do, how we need to do it, and everything. Tonight's guest is Major Denise Nichols. Denise is a retired U.S. Air Force registered nurse. She did medevac up at Log Base Charlie up at the northwest corner of the Tapline Road during Desert Storm. But her career goes all the way back to Vietnam. And in fact, she did nursing at Wolford Hall during the Vietnam era. And I had the, pleasure or distinct, in Wolford Hall back in the 1967. And then again, when I was back on active duty as a DU project director back in 1995. Denise, are you there tonight?
I am here, and thank you for welcoming me to your show.
Well, excellent. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Denise and I met, must be about 1997 now. I was finished up my job as a director of the Depleted Uranium Project and had went back to the university. They recalled me as a director of the Brattle Labs for a short period of time until politics got in the way. And I finally made the decision that I couldn't sit back any longer, as many of you know, and I went to the public and started telling everything. And lo and behold, I ran into Major Denise Nichols. She had figured it all out. She had known what was going on and what was involved in it, even before Bowers Raiders came out on the scene from deep inside the military. Tonight, what I thought we would do, and Denise is the expert, she's done a lot of this teaching me, how do we do it, how do we get by, who do we need to know, what do we need to do, on the ins and outs of Washington, D.C. Unfortunately, a veteran of any type can't get prompt and adequate care, optimal medical care, without dealing with the bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. Well, Denise, welcome to the show, and why don't you start out and give us a little bit of history of the early hearings and findings on what we know today as Gulf War illness, and I guess that goes all the way back to Vietnam with Agent Orange, doesn't it?
It sure does, and probably before that with World War One with mustard gas. I would, go back and look at the whole history. But before we start, Doug, we talked about this before, is that we have Gulf War veterans dying at too early an age. And I just pulled up at random one from this week. Maureen Roberts Green Hightower. She was 46 years old. She died Friday. She had the problems. She's a veteran of the U.S. Air Force and served over in the Gulf War. And so she was 48, and she is no longer with us. Any memorial contributions, which gives you an idea of what they died from, but to myotonic dystrophy research. So she had the neuromuscular problems. So I just thought I'd pull up one of many that have died recently, and this continues on. And this is why it's so important to key in on this. We have our Gulf War veterans dying at too early of an age, no matter what their diagnosis may be. This is just totally out of sight. As a nurse that had a long nursing career, I watched this happening, and I go, they're just not getting it yet of how serious this situation is. She was 46. 21 years ago, she would have been, 25. She was a youngster, not like you and I, Doug.
I think it was incredible. I think one of the things important for everybody to understand, and the veterans will understand this, and I think family members and anybody else that's listening, when we did get ready to deploy during Vietnam era, you go back to the Vietnam era, as I know all too well, and up to Desert Storm and then the current work with the current operations. Prior to deployment, most everybody was extraordinarily healthy, correct?
I would think so. To get into the military, you have to be a very healthy person to go through the physical exams and to get admitted into the military. So it's highly unusual to see so many cases of neuromuscular problems, much less all the vague type symptoms that they connect to Gulf War illness, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel, and the list goes on. But to see the young people dying of heart attacks early in life, strokes, pulmonary embolism, whatever the cause, it's just, it's totally ridiculous and outside of normal. And so we have to work on these diagnosed illnesses too, besides SCA4 illness. But to jump back into what we have to do and where we've been, you have to make headway. And the first hearings that we had on the Hill, and I have to laugh because Michael Woods, who died in November on Veterans Day, his kids go, I was up there with my dad, and I didn't see a hill. The Hill is Congress, being the Senate and the House. And the first hearings occurred back in November of 1993.
Wow.
Those were the first hearings.
Man, I was still so deep on the inside trying to correct problems that I had no idea what was happening in Washington.
Yeah, and we had vets go up there and testify at that hearing. Then it really kicked off in 94. Just, I'm going to briefly tell the history, okay?
Just it'd be brief. Perfect.
94, we had the first meeting that I went to was at the National Institute of Health at Bethesda. And basically the Army was standing up to everybody in the room, and the auditorium was full of university instructors, I mean, Gulf War vets. The Army was telling their story, and the rest of us were saying, whoa, you don't have it right. But that was the Gulf War, or Persian Gulf War and health implications. And during that time, there was supposed to be that on the same week as Senator Rockefeller was having hearings on Gulf War illness and Senator Riegel. Well, President Nixon, I believe, was the one that died, so everything got kind of spaced out. But we had the NIH conference within the week. We had the Senator Rockefeller's hearing, and he brought out about all the PB pills, the vaccines, those type of issues that he brought out.
Now, you were participating in most of these hearings, correct?
Oh, yeah. We kind of divided forces, getting back and forth from Colorado to D.C. is expensive, as you know. But the Rockefeller hearing, we had a group out of Pennsylvania, Ohio, so we said, well, y'all got to be back quicker so you can drive in. So they went back and covered that hearing and were in the audience. Then Riegel's hearing, myself were there, was there, Tim Griley, Colonel Herb Smith.
Colonel Herb Smith, him and I go back together all the way to Desert Storm and down in Riyadh and Escan Village when Herb Smith was responsible for putting together the preventive medicine on the oil well fires and also some of the hazardous materials contamination up in Kuwait. Mm-hmm. And when we did that battle plan, we actually did that in what was basically my bedroom.
Yeah. And then we had Navy, Vietnam, and Gulf War nurse, Julie Dykeman. Those are just the names I can think of, plus the National Vietnam Veterans Coalition had me save them chairs, and they came and joined us. Senator Riegel was, you know, just dynamic as everything. Very impressed since the get-go with him. And he had staffers like Jim Tewitt, and Pat Eddington's wife was a staffer there. So we had a good run at him, just identifying the problem in 93 and 94. And then we come along to the continuation in 96, the Government Reform and Oversight Committee out of the House took on this issue. 3 years of hearings on Gulf War illness, and I believe 2 years of hearings on the anthrax vaccine problem. We had scattered hearings on the Veterans Affairs Committee in the House side. They really weren't jumping on it, so I think our lead at that time was Burton with the Government Reform Oversight and with Mr. Shays, who is now running for Senate from Connecticut to come back to the Hill for us. We hope that he wins. We need good people that know about Gulf War illness and the problems thereof. Then we went from there to the VA Senate hearings, one of which that I know has been a YouTube and out there is General Starman and General Powell testifying, and they were not put under oath, but that was kind of their investigation, and that was probably 1996. And then we had other scattered House VA committee hearings, and I've testified in several of these. And then we had the VA Senate get back involved, and they had Julie Mock, who is from Washington State, and they kind of focused on the research and multiple sclerosis problems with Julie, and we have a large number of vets with MS. We have had Senator Hutchinson had a hearing, and Senator Hutchinson brought in Ross Perot, Dr. Robert Haley, and it was a dynamic hearing. So we've gone back and forth to both, you know, chambers of the Congress. We've fought for bills and legislation that have not been completely implemented correctly. And so the last hearings, the last several hearings, were out of the VA House Committee Oversight on the problem with research. Now, since the early beginning, Doug, the VA, well, the DoD let off the show saying it's all stress, all PTSD stress. Well, I'm sorry. We do have PTSD in the group, but this is not like Korea, hand-to-hand combat, not like Vietnam with the canopy and sniper attacks and the bloodbath that occurred there. It's not like World War II. So it's a different war. And they wanted to put it off on stress. Well, as a nurse, I know that the cost factor would be cheaper that way. You know, put us all over in psych, use psychotropics, get them quiet, get them like mummies. But that doesn't address the physical problems with all the exposures. And I like to put all the exposures together and go, you've been poisoned. And if you're a Vietnam vet and you had Agent Orange, your risk factor is going to be bigger. If you have any family history of any illnesses diagnosed, it's going to be higher.
I think one of the things important, I'd like to point this out to everybody right now, on my team members, Sergeant Major Jim Runge, Sergeant First/John Sitton, two of the guys that died early from all of this stuff, were both Vietnam vets.
Right.
So they had, as you know, because you've got the opportunity to talk to all these people, they were the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
And then they died, denied care, and what had happened, the Vietnam Agent Orange stuff that snuck up on them, when they got zapped with all the work that they did do in theater. And again, this ties together because, as you know, Sergeant Major Runge and Colonel Herb Smith, Dr. Herb Smith, Green Beret Colonel Herb Smith, were, you know, one-on-one partners on all the oil well stuff and the hazmat up in Kuwait.
Well, we've had a couple of generals die, and my brain's not completely triggering right now, but I know the last one was General Yosok, who died, and then we had, I think, the one that led the special ops-type people has died, and he was Vietnam, too. But, you know, those that have Vietnam experience are going to get a double whammy here, and I don't think they'll live as long as some of the past war veterans of World War II, Korea. It's just not going to happen, and it's sad but true because of the exposures that they've gone through in their life. If they were Marines, the other thing to bring in here is a beautiful movie that's out now and can be purchased, is a Marine Simplified that talks about the base contamination at Camp Pendleton. Great film. It'll bring you to tears faster than anything. That movie Simplified won a lot of film awards. It is now out there available. It's been touring around the country for the last year. So, you know, you add to that any exposures, and a lot of our bases are on the contaminated base or contaminated cleanup sites.
The amount of contamination is just staggering. Yeah. I mean, when we look up just in Washington, D.C. area, Fort Detrick, Fort Myers, the chemical and biological, radiological contamination, there was significant. It's on just Army Time story just a couple weeks ago where they're trying to force, you know, the military to clean up those installations. but again, they're reluctant to do so. So we're seeing continued contamination.
The hearings, you know, the reason I talked about, they tried to push it to PTSD and stress. They knew better, Doug, and you know they knew better.
I think the thing that bothered me the most when we both got up there, and this, you know, progresses up into the, you know, 2000, 2001, the 90s, 98, 90, 99, Colonel Charles Engel was pushing all of the PTSD and everything as all the physiological effects we were seeing as stress-related.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the two of us together, this I think was in March of 2001, they had, if you remember, they had called all of the command staff back up to Washington, D.C. for the 10th years.
Right.
And we had all the generals there, and our good old buddy Mikey Kilpatrick and Sue and all of them were there.
General Horner was the Air Force.
I remember that, and you and I actually talked to General Horner personally, one-on-one, and during that conversation, we reminded him of the decision, as you know, we made the decision at the command headquarters back in December 1990 to blow everything up in place, all the chemical, biological stuff that the U.S. had given to Iraq. And again, you know, we put the warnings out, and then if you remember distinctly, Chuck Horner said, boy, you know, Bowers Raiders, you guys were right, physiological effects have all got us. You know, and he himself had physiological effects as we're all standing there. I remember you and the three of us around the piano, and you as a nurse are going, well, I know what happened to two of you now, don't I?
Yeah. I want to mention here, Doug, that we have, I'm not sure of the numbers, but we also have the non-deployed that I discovered early in 92, 93 that did not go over there, had shots here in the States, developed illnesses, didn't go over in theater. They have been completely neglected. And I try to bring them out in every program or any time I talk about them because they also dealt with our equipment coming home.
Yeah, I just think
and
there's one.
All the sand and contamination, be it aircraft, be it tanks, be it trucks, the maintenance people that didn't go getting in there and working on it, gas masks, you know, they had people that had not deployed that were cleaning the mask after we got home. You know, all the gear, tinnage, everything that came back.
We don't know
if it's just a vaccine or a combination of base contamination and our equipment coming back. But I want to mention that there's that population, too. And, you know, the Kansas study looked at the non-deployed, but we have not gotten anything to really help them get their claims through. And you kind of have to gag because the Gulf War vets themselves that were in theater are fighting a huge battle to get their claims through.
I think right here, that's a good point because, I mean, we were both involved with troops from Fort Hood in Texas,
mm-hmm.
where we know they did not get deployed, but then the physiological effects, because we were in medical care with one of them, ourselves personally,
right,
from the stuff that hit us in theater, and they had the same medical problems, I remember, when we were down there in Dallas seeking medical care.
Well, the first indication I had was back in the early 90s, Doug, and I had people in a Army unit, Army medical unit out of, I believe, Washington State or California, I'm trying to remember their designation, but part of them had gone and they were sick, and then they were getting me in touch with others that had not gone that were equally as sick. Then I started getting reports from where the equipment came in through the ports on the West Coast and, you know, Vietnam vets working in these ports. I started getting phone calls from families going, my husband's getting sick from dealing with all the equipment in these huge warehouses with roller bars pushing equipment through, K-rats, bags, what have you. And so I reported that to Jim Tewitt, who was a staffer for the Regal investigation. And so I knew it was happening early on. I know the studies that have been done have been spotty at all. And it really concerns me because we need them into the studies, and we need to have healthy age control matches and sex that were healthy, whether they're civilian or not. But healthy, be sure they're healthy. We need the non-deployed that are ill, identified as ill as a subset, and then also are deployed. Because if they don't get all groups into it, we won't get the better answers in research. Now, the other thing to talk about is that the slant, all the monies that went to research early on, from the time we came home, they were already working on this. It's like a planned program, and that's putting it nicely, Doug. But, you know, they were funding stress studies and PTSD studies, and, you know, sitting there going, this is a waste of money. They're going up the tree the wrong way. And so that battle has been waged, and that was not helping us. That's been the major block for us, is what they did on that end. So we got the bill through for symptoms and Gulf War illness. We're trying to get compensation for it. Hasn't been, you know, it's starting to maybe turn around now, maybe, in the last year. It's still a battle to get them through, but at the same time, we have to stop them from any more stress research. And we told them that through the VA Research Advisory Committee, Gulf War Illness Research, that was a program set up by an act of law. Their first meetings were in 2002. 2004, they came out with a report, and Mr. Perot was up there, Haley was up there, everybody was in D.C. for the release of this report that it is not stress. Okay?
Oh, you know, we knew it wasn't stress from the beginning because of the complex exposures. Because in Bowers Raiders at 3rd MedCom and during Desert Storm, we're seeing the physiological effects and we're setting up the medical directives.
But we still have people like Ingalls, and I'll tell you about that in just a second. But what happened was that the Research Advisory Committee has been the fighters for us to get them to stop the stress research, and the VA research still continues on that path. Now, we're working to change up. They've got some new people involved in the last 3 or 4 months. We'll have to see if anything changes. The DOD was all kind of stress and force protection. All that funding went away from the DOD, which was a good thing, I guess, with 2001. So what was decided, and we were looking at where can we get good research, where can we fund to get really good research after all these years and years of stress. So Dennis Kucinich and Senator Sanders, who both served on the Government Reform Committee with Shays, leading it up in Burton, decided that we could make a little detour around the road trap, the roadblock, and go to a program that's congressionally directed medical research. Yes, it's in the Defense Appropriations money, but it's separate, and it seems to have been working. We first went and got the fund, started working on it in 05, 06, for funding in 06. We got $5 million. Doesn't go very far, but good start.
One thing, right?
And just summarizing that program, it's gotten from $5 million to $10 million per year, but every year we have to go fight for it. Now, the difference here is this is new research, okay? It's really looking at where the damage is in the body, okay? There's no doubt we've been damaged. Find where and what pathway is damaged so we can possibly find some good treatment, okay? That is the whole plan. So the other difference is that VA research is restricted to people that are employed by the VA. Now, this new program, CDMRP, and I call it new because we just got the funding in fiscal year 06, so you didn't start seeing the funded programs up and running until probably 07, okay, and we're just starting to get some of the early studies published and out, and they're supportive of what we've been saying all along. Now, the key here is that we have two review panels, and we have people from the VA Research Advisory Committee that are on our side that are on those so that we wean out any bad research proposals, and we're looking at the true physiological damage and how we can deal with it, diagnostic and treatment. And Then there's a peer review panel, which is scientists, and there is also Gulf War vets that serve on that. So we have kind of a double check going as the proposals come in each year. The other thing that they're starting, which I just, this is fantastic, but bringing in the universities that were there way back at that first meeting I told you about. They wanted to be involved and help find answers. So we have universities forming up collaborative studies, working with each other and finding the best. This program is open civilian worldwide to the researchers worldwide. They don't have to be DOD or VA. You're going to get the best of the best that way. So right now we're going after the first step is for a representative to form up with counterpart, so it's bipartisan, to get the first step into the appropriations process for the year. We have Representative Kachinik and Representative Rowe leading the charge on the House side. We're asking vets and civilians to make calls to their representatives up in the House of Representatives, U.S., call directly into their phone lines in their D.C. office, ask for a veterans, military staffer, or a legislative director, and ask them to get their rep onto the colleague letter, which is step one to go after the funds this year, for this coming fiscal year. And
Denise?
So that process, the deadline's the 15th, so that Representative Kachinik and Representative Rowe can present it to the Appropriations Committee for the first step. We'll have the Senate letter coming out shortly. Their deadline will be, I believe, April 19th. So we have that effort. We have it on Facebook about it. People can contact me if they need more info, and my email is dsnurse, like Desert Storm Nurse, 1@yahoo.com for more info so that we can handle questions that way, too. But the emphasis on the hearings of late have been the battle with the RAC committee standing up for us and trying to get VA to stop spending money the wrong way. We had Haley funded out of University of Texas Southwest for a five-year project, $15 million a year. He was doing good work. And in the third year, they stopped him. And it was like a contractual type thing over the consenting. And they took that money from us. We had gotten that. It was a big, you know, hoopla that they were going to do this. Third year, they shut him down. So that tells us that VA was not on our right side here. And they took that money and said it would be used for Gulf War illness research. Well, that was $15 million plus anything else they had there. They've only spent $4.9 million, I think, past year. And the studies we've seen have been more slanted toward stress still. National Academy of Science Institute of Medicine has been involved. They do like literature review. They're contracted by the VA to do this, and we've battled with them. The last one that came out, Dr. Stephen Hauser was the chairman. He is head of neurology at University of California, San Francisco. He got it. His committee got it. They said it's real. We can get them help, but we need funds to, you know, find the right diagnostics and the right treatment. So they came on board. We started a new National Academy of Science Institute of Medicine. First meeting went pretty well. Well, we just hit number two meeting, and the bad guys got loose again. It was all slanted towards psychological. Dr. Ingalls et al.
I think there's one thing that's real important here. We have to stop for a moment. Dennis Kucinich has been one of the champions for veterans. Unfortunately, I think we go into a break right now.
Yes.
Okay. What? Well, welcome back to Warrior Connection. This is Doug Rocky, and my guest tonight is Denise Nichols. We've been talking about the history of Gulf War illness and all the hearings and things been going up in Washington, D.C., where, unfortunately, we have to rely on them to pass bills in Congress or get the VA to agree to do what they're already required to do. And as we come up here, Denise has just been explaining everything, what the connections are, what the hearings were, what was found there, and what's been said for, oh boy, it's going on 20 years now. But the important thing to understand, she had mentioned Jim Toot earlier, and Jimmy Toot did the Regal Commission report, which was the list of confirmation that the U.S. provided the chemical and biological to Iraq, and that whole list is out there. It's available on websites. Beyond Treason would be a good site to go place to get it. The other thing, too, grassrootspeace.org, Sonny Miller and Charlie Jinks's old Trap Rock site that's still maintained. The other thing with Jimmy Toot and all that we did, there was a movie that was done on Showtime called Thanks for Grateful Nation, starring Ted Danson and Mark Helgenberger. And again, in that movie, it's very, very, and a lot of individuals are involved. Chris Shays absolutely had a key role in that, as did a whole bunch more, and that was a early documentary movie for Showtime on television, describing all the problems and what happened. So very, very important. The other thing, too, as we discussed, is a Research Advisory Committee, VA report. That was released in 2008, and that confirmed all the physiological effects from PB, pesticides, everything out, except it didn't touch anthrax or the depleted uranium, because those are our own weapons, and they didn't want to admit or acknowledge the incredible medical problems.
Well, I have to put in, they do have chapters on what is needed in those areas. So they didn't neglect it. They didn't shut the door on it, because there are chapters in the report that deal with the problems with the research. So, you know, it's not a door that's shut. It just needs more work.
Why a door opened up. Now, the other thing, too, and this is one of the bad things for the veterans, with the redistrict and everything, Dennis Kucinich lost in the primary.
Yes.
And so I know, talking with his staff in the last few days, they're trying to figure out what is the next move, because Dennis has absolutely no intention of giving up the fight. As I understand it from his staff members, he has no intention of stopping to help the vets. And he just has to figure out what can he do next now that he won't be in Congress this next time. Hopefully we'll get Chris Shays back in there, which will make a big difference. We got still Bernie from up in Vermont or New Hampshire. And we also got Jim McDermott from out in Washington State, Seattle area. We got Tim Johnson here from right here in Champaign, Illinois.
You're getting to it. There's a handful. And that's why we need phone calls to the D.C. offices, from the vets, from the family, from civilians, saying this is not over. They're not being taken care of. We need them taken care of at the VA. We need to get their claims through. That's the last thing I wanted to get out, is that the hearings that we've had lately, in the last number of years, has been on the House VA with their oversight committee. Subcommittee, and mainly dealing with this problem with research money going the wrong direction to psych. And they've hammered on them and hammered on them. Like I said, maybe the VA's getting the picture that that's not going to work anymore. I hope they have. The last meeting up there, the end of January, 1st of February, it was quite explosive, and it has been the last three or four meetings. But they're working on them. You know, we got to keep the pressure on VA to turn around and do the right thing. The other way we get VA to turn around is we go back up there and try to get hearings. Now, I'm trying to get hearings on the health issue and on the claims issue and get the veterans up there, just like we did with Shays' committee of veterans that maybe you've never heard of. It's not Doug Rokey. It's not Denise Nichols. It's not Paul Sutherland. It's not Jim Bunker. It's not the ones that have been up there working their tails off. It is the vets telling their story of when they go into the VA, the doctors not knowing anything about Gulf War illness or exposures, having not read the materials that even the VA puts out. And that is just totally bad news from a nurse having patients have to carry in materials and begging the doctors to read it so they're more informed. That's just wrong, and that's got to turn around. So the doctors need a shake-up, okay, from the top down, bottom up, every which way. And then also on the claims problem, we need hearings about how the claims are not being dealt with effectively to get our troops that are sick. They can't function. Their wives are having to take up the battle. I want them up at the table telling them what is really happening out there. Give it a picture of all these vets and their families that are suffering, and the families are breaking up over it because financial, family dynamics, everything's involved here. These vets are not capable of holding a job, and yet they can't get their claims through. They can get a Social Security claim through faster than a VA claim. That doesn't make any sense.
I know I've got my own cousin who was a combat medic with the 82nd Airborne up at this time. Again, he went up the MSR that, you know, came right there by Long Base Charlie where you were, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That main MSR. And we know there were chemical and biological mines on that MSR going north because I treated the casualties as they came back out. But, I mean, the physiological effects and everything, and, I mean, it was just a nightmare. And he just finally, after all the years, he just finally got 100% claim put through here just about a month ago.
Yeah.
But, again, all the same physiological problems. So we're seeing all of the PTSD problems. We're seeing all the neuromuscular problems. We're seeing all these same diagnosed problems that, I mean, as a nurse, frontline combat nurse, you have seen forever and ever and ever, especially with Desert Storm and now Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom. So we're seeing the same diagnosis, the same physiological effects. And unfortunately, as you know all too well, because you yourself are affected and you saw this from day one, this wasn't bullets or bombs. This was toxic exposures.
Right. I mean, when I was there, we weren't told a lot of things being Air Force, and we were up on the border. We were told to take the PB chip pills. We took the anthrax shots. It just was not being told to the medical people, so they were keeping the medical people in the dark while we were over there. But I picked up unusual stuff happening. I mean, from females with menstrual cycles that couldn't be controlled, we had to ship them out, to dumb accidents, people not thinking, and this isn't normal for our troops to do dumb things and get injured doing dumb things, okay? I picked it up before we got up to our forward location at KKMC on behavior patterns that I was seeing, and it wasn't PTSD. It was more like a concussion. You have in a car accident, and you see this patient in the ER, and you know, their brains are rattled and there's edema and they're not thinking straight. And their behavior has changed because of the irritability in the brain. And that's how I could explain what I saw as the, you know, movement of us from Riyadh to KKNC up to Log Base Charlie. And, you know, I was sitting there when it was happening going, this is weird. What the heck's going on? I heard about combat troops having fights with each other. You know, insubordination of people that were easygoing that I've known for years. And, you know, it wasn't just us. It was widespread. And I was going, something is going on here. And it wasn't until I got home that I started networking, putting pieces together. And thank goodness for Victor Sylvester on the old Prodigy Network bulletin board that was a Vietnam vet and a Gulf War vet father. He and Coy Overstreet, that was an atomic vet and Vietnam vet, out there, you know, they were the first outreach we had of, you guys got to wake up. We got work to do. Y'all are in a bind. You need to get going.
Well, I think with yourself, I mean, you're treating casualties as they're coming out of Iraq. You're treating casualties as are developed in Saudi Arabia proper.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get any casualties out of Kuwait that were medevaced over to you?
Ours handled right behind. We were 7th Corps support, so it was a hook going in through Iraq around to Kuwait. So that was where we got the main flow of patients.
So one of the things I know that you and I discussed, and I think this is for everybody to understand because it's extremely important, you weren't involved in any actual depleted uranium impacts where you're in the tank, anything
no.
at that time,
no.
but you treated the casualties.
Right.
And what we do know physiologically yourself and from your lab test came back. You came back positive for DU when your tests were run.
Right, and that was coordinated by Dr. Asif Durakovich.
Colonel Asif Durakovich.
And I sent my urine to him. I didn't go through Bethesda. I didn't trust him. And 9 years after the war, I come back with a trace. And what they threw at us then was, well, it's in your drinking water wherever you live. Well, I got smart. I went to the Public Health Department of State of Colorado and the Water Board. I got all the documentation for my area where I live. No way. And I spread that word through messages on the Internet, and I remember some of your cohorts going, hey, good move. You know, we were wondering what the heck we were going to do about that little issue that it came from where we lived.
I think one of the other things important right there, and I did share this with you, somehow we need to get this out to everybody, but the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs several years ago published a book, Some Things You Need to Know About Veterans, A Clinician's Guide to Veteran-Specific Issues.
Mm-hmm.
And Denise, you have your copy of this. I know you do. You've seen it and studied this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that, again, was put out directly by the VA, and the doctor was responsible for it, is Dr. Barbara Hajduk and
right.
Dr. Alan Mello. But in this thing, what they did is they broke down the signs and symptoms that we're seeing. And when we looked at this stuff, and it frightened me when I first got it because I've used it to obtain my medical care. I give it to others to get their medical care because I picked it up directly at the Danville VA Medical Center.
Yeah, I want to mention, I think that came out of your area.
The area
of the country is divided, so that is not the guide that everybody gets from VA headquarters. This was done by that vision location where you're at in Illinois, Iowa area. That is not the same thing that everybody gets. So I'm going to get that scanned and out to everybody on the Internet and on Facebook.
When we look at some of these, because the signs and symptoms as a nurse, we're looking at this stuff. So you saw this firsthand. You've been working with it now for 20 years.
Right.
You know, one of the things that's coming up, and we have to understand traumatic brain injury has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, so some of the mild TBI, we got dizziness, nausea, insomnia, behavioral, concentration problems, irritability. Now, you already described that a couple minutes ago.
Right.
Depression, anxiety, other stuff, the vision problems, the ringing in the ears, the problems with taste and fatigue.
Two things here. They are now using brain injury without the trauma title with GUF-4 illness, okay? It's traumatic brain without the trauma. We got exposures that caused it.
Mm-hmm.
So that is going on as terminology shifts every time we turn around, and that causes a problem. But the focus, you know, has been getting them stopped with the stress. Get into the real stuff. And we're making headway with that thanks to the law we got with the VA RAC and having that by law, not by the Secretary of VA's initiative. That really has helped us. And I know it has a VA title on it, but the Research Advisory Committee was pushed into law by GUF-4 veterans like myself, others, that went and pushed to get that law. And without them, I don't know where we'd be today. They have done a lot of good work. I want to emphasize that if veterans want to have an impact, every hearing, either call in and listen and get to make public comment over the phone, or you get there and do public comment. We need more than four or five showing up. And I know it's an imposition and it's an expense, but, you know, there's a lot of people that can drive in. They're close enough. We need more people telling what it's really like as a veteran that's sick on the public comment. We need more people writing, calling, and consistent over and over again and building that force of letters and phone calls to the Hill to get hearings not only on the research problem, but what's happening to the vets in the meantime.
They're calling for the family members and the vets themselves, not the handful of us have been instrumental in trying to get the truth out for years.
That's correct, Doug. And so that's why I'm asking for letters. And, again, I gave my email, dsnurse1@yahoo.com. Listen, I just went, made the connection, made the plea to have hearings. I am getting these letters. When I get them, I say I've received it. I read through it. If there's anything that may need a correction or they may want to put something in, I make a quick comment back to them. They look at it and decide if they want to do anything. And when it's done, I go, okay, I'm forwarding it. And I forward it up to the Hill as I get them. And I have had contact. I've called back to be sure they're reading them and, you know, that kind of thing. and that is opening their eyes again. It is convincing them that they need to do more on the Hill, because the Hill, being the House and the Senate, it's where we can get pressure put back onto the VA system. Okay? Now, you can have rallies, and there's a new rally, the All Vets March, just came up on Facebook this past week, trying to get thousands up there to demonstrate against the VA. And I have to say, fine, go to it. We need to have the forces come together and share information and let them know that we will get up there one way or the other. But that's not where it starts. It starts with hitting our elected officials to let them know what's going on so that they can exert force by calling the VA to the Hill and saying, listen, you're going to hear these vets. What are you doing about it? How fast are you going to correct this problem? I'm about fixing the daggum problems and getting people help. Okay? And rallies are good, and I think you've been up there with me for Rolling Thunder. They come in from across the nation on their motorcycles. So it shows the force that can be mobilized by Vietnam vets primarily. POW, MIA, Agent Orange were all their issues that we've learned from. But they go up there, and then you never hear from these people. You don't know if they're writing letters. You don't know where their focus is. Are they going to the Hill in force to go see their elected representatives and say, no more. Get them up here on the Hill and get these problems fixed. We have to turn to our elected officials to get it fixed. Yes, you can have a rally at Lafayette Park and make noise and, you know, let them see the force come out. But you have to follow through with these other steps that so many of us have been working on for 21 years and have been begging the vets to come up, join us, go to the Hill with us.
I think one of the things important, and you and I together, because you taught me, is we literally went to Washington, D.C., and we walked the Hills of Congress.
Yeah, we did.
In the halls, into the offices, met with the staff, primary staffers, in both the House and the U.S. Senate. We provided the direct documentation to them. At the same time, we provided the documentation, we provided the recommendations on how to solve the problem. And I think that's important for everybody to understand. You can't just identify a problem.
You have to give them solutions.
You have to come up with a solution, then all the documentation. Because I know some of the, when you and I walked into some of these the offices in the House and the Senate.
They go, what do you want us to do?
It created some interesting things because we had a shadow from the Department of Defense out of Mikey's office following us around.
Yeah, we did.
It was very fascinating. And the most interesting, I think, when we were working with the people in the House and the Senate, is once they actually saw the reports themselves, put their fingers on the report, put the fingers on the orders that were there and that have been denied and delayed from getting out, put it on the medical directors that have been in place at the VA doctors, don't see. It gave a whole new tone to everything.
Yeah, it did. We've been up there briefing them, taking stuff. You came with me. I took Dr. Bill Baumschweiger up there to brief and show the damage. We had, you know, ill Gulf War vets, and he'd do an exam on them. The staffers, we did six of these briefings that I organized, okay? And, you know, bugged the staffers on the VA committee and staffers of the members to come, and we held six of them over 3 days, I think. And, you know, we pulled in some sick Gulf War vets that Dr. Bill had never seen. He did an initial physical exam like he did with you down in Atlanta at CDC conference on Gulf War illness. And, you know, the vets are, you know, stand up and they've never had a physical exam like that. That just pointed out all the problems right there with a good physical exam.
I think probably the most fascinating, frightening physical exam we did there was sit with Bill Baumschweiger and also Dr. Vin Kam from the Presidential Special Oversight Board was on Michael Donald.
Oh, yeah.
bring tears in my eyes. Michael Donald was an Air Force pilot, got zapped by the chem bio in flight and everything, came back. He got zapped to contamination down at Shepherd Air Force Base, and then he eventually died. And he was a very close friend of both Denise and mine. His sister was a very good friend, and his parents were good friends.
And wrote the book, Falcon's Cry.
Yeah, and a very important book.
It needs to be made into a movie. If we've got any movie producers listening, that book is a movie waiting to be made.
And I remember when we were up there and Bill did the physiological exam with Dr. Vin Kam on Mike O'Donnell, and then he did it on you and he did it on me and others were there. And Vincam had this look on her face of pure shock because it all totally came together. This is incredible neurotoxic exposures.
Remember the doctor from Hickam that you went and got medicine with?
Yeah, well, that was the command surgeon for the 82nd Airborne that saved my life at the CDC.
Yeah, and he was up there. I pulled him up special to go up to the hotel room so he could see and with his own eyes, you know, what was happening. He was shocked, wasn't he, Doug?
Totally, when it came together. But I think it's a whole combination of stuff, and we're going back to basic medicine, basic emergency medicine. I mean, Denise and I have done this for years, and we try to teach it to other ones, but we're trying to get everybody to look at the holistic nature, the whole picture of everything. What are the true history of where the person is, what they did, what they were involved in, what did they get exposed to, what were the medical problems before they got there, how have these changed?
Right.
The most frightening thing for you, both you and I, from our professional standpoint, is the neurophysiology and the neuropsychology changes.
Right.
And what we see on individuals, and you pointed this out the first time we ever met, because you said you saw this immediately with the toxic exposure, you're seeing neuropsychology, neurophysiology, where the person's brain and how they're responding is not working day right at all from the beginning.
That's correct, and that was Dr. Baumslager's strong point, because he was psychology in the beginning, and he had gone into neurology. He could give you the background on how neuropsych had breakups through the years, you know. And so, you know, we need to understand that, but it's true neurological physical damage that affects the ability to remember how to spell, remembering names, remembering, you know, the memory problems. And then the irritability, it's just like a concussion, but it doesn't go away in 48, 72 hours. They're irritable because there's still that inflammatory type process that is attacking at their neurological level and causing symptoms throughout the body, respiratory, the whole works. And you mentioned ears ringing. I want to tell people that is called ototoxicity. If it's not from noise damage, and they can tell by a good exam and testing with the ears, if it is not from noise damage, you have to look further. And the main problem that hit the nerve of the ear to cause the constant ringing in the ear, tendonitis, you can get that from chemotherapy, because that can hit that nerve. You can get it from high-level, consistent antibiotic. Aspirin can do that. The other causes are all the chemical exposures and all the other stuff we had. And that has not been paid attention to enough, much less the dental problems that you and I and others have had.
The teeth breaking out. I mean, it's like, well, it's a piece of French bread. All that's I'm chewing on, and my teeth just broke off and fell out.
And no pain.
And, yeah, there's no decay. This is not where you have decay like you have, normal to dentists where, you know, candy and sugar. This is the two structures literally decaying because, I mean, yeah, especially with the uranium, it's pulling out all the calcium and the phosphorus. It's just physically removing it from the tooth.
Well, I hear the music coming up in the background, Doug.
Yeah.
It's been an hour, I think, informative for the audience.
Will you join us again, Denise?
I certainly will. More than willing, anytime. I'd be your co-host, whatever you want.
Well, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Again, another exciting, informative, and frightening hour of Warrior Connection. Hey, Progressive Radio Network is going forward, ladies and gentlemen. Join us, join in, and come along with us, and go for the ride to help the world. Thank you very much, and good evening.